Hi, everybody. This is Ramble Redhead Show, and today we have a special guest, and his name is Adam, and he's a fellow podcaster, and he had listened to my show that I did recently about the movie Brokeback Mountain, and so I talked with him, and he obviously has some feelings about the movie as well, and so what we'd like to do is have a discussion today about that movie, and what I'd like to do is welcome Adam to the program. Hello, Adam.
Hi there. How you doing?
I am great. How about yourself?
Doing well. Doing well.
Okay, great. And what I was wondering, if you could do me a favor, and if you could tell the my lovely listeners a little bit more about yourself and where you're from, and also the name of your podcast, and maybe a little bit more about what you talk about, and maybe...
Sure. My name's Adam, as you said, and I'm 25 years old, and I have a podcast and a blog. It's at, you can find that at the KrebsCycle.blogspot.com, and my blog is just, you know, it's just my daily thoughts on, you know, whatever comes to my mind. It's pretty much usually political. Sometimes it's just, you know, photographs or whatever. But, and then my podcast is pretty much the same. So that's what it's about. It's largely political, I think.
Okay, great. And, well, and I was just wondering, where are you from then?
I'm from Dallas.
Dallas. And you've been there for how long?
I've lived in Dallas for 3 years.
Okay, great. And where were you before that?
Before that, I was in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay, cool. So mostly,
and then before that, I was in Phoenix, and before that, I was in New York City. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're all over the place.
Yep.
So where were you born then?
New York.
New York. And so is that where your family still is then?
Yeah, half and half. My parents, they spend half the year in New York City and then another half of the year in Arizona. And then my brothers and sisters are scattered about the country, so.
Oh, cool. And yep. And you are a homosexual. And
yes, I am indeed.
And you have a partner.
Uh-huh.
And you've been together for how long?
5 years now.
Congratulations. And, okay, everybody likes to know this question. How did you meet?
Well, we met on the internet, actually.
Okay, and was it a homosexual site?
Yes, it was.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
are there any other kinds of sites?
No, of course not. Well, I was just wondering, is it a popular one? Was it a local one? Or...
Yeah, it was gay.com.
It was. Okay, cool. So it can happen, folks.
Yeah, it can.
You know, gay.com is not just for that. You can actually meet the love of your life, like Adam did.
Indeed, indeed.
Do you want to say hello to him?
What's that?
Do you want to say hello to him? In case he wants...
Oh, my partner?
Yeah.
Well, okay, hi, Brad.
We never know. He might listen. Okay.
Maybe.
is it tough to get your friends to listen to your own podcast?
My friends, no. My partner, yes.
Oh, it's harder to get the partner to listen?
Yeah, because, you know, his excuse is, I can just hear you talk at home. I don't need to hear you talk on my iPod. So, which is a valid excuse. So.
That's true. Yeah, and then he can actually talk back and say, no, I think you're wrong. No.
Exactly.
Or I think you're right. Okay. Well, good. Well, obviously, as the listeners know, that we're here to talk about a certain movie, Brokeback Mountain. And what I was wondering is, when you heard about the movie, I mean, how long ago did you hear about it?
I had just heard about the movie, I guess it was in the summer, in August. And I had heard about it. I was reading Out magazine, just paging through it. And they mentioned that, you know, it was going to be one of the, you know, movies of, you know, the upcoming fall movie season, whatnot. And it was based on a short story by Annie Proulx. And so that's how I heard about it in Out magazine.
Okay, great. And so did you have any, I mean, what were your expectations about it? Were you excited? Were you,
I was pretty excited for it because when I had heard about the movie, I didn't really know much what it was about and everything. I knew it was just, you know, these gay cowboys or whatever. So, you know, I was reading a lot of blogs then, and I was blogging quite frequently then, as I do now, and I went to a blog and I forget the name of the blog, what it is now, and he was a big fan of the short story, and he had a link to the short story on Amazon.com. They had it up there for a while, but now that the movie's gone completely, you know, you know, it's been so successful, they took it down.
Right.
And I got a copy of the short story from Amazon.com, and I read it, and I was just, I was blown away. I was completely just, you know, I thought it was a great story, and mm-hmm. I was really excited to see the movie, you know, and, but I have to admit that I was a bit trepidatious about seeing the movie because of all the hype.
Right. Well, see, that's one of the biggest things that happened. I mean, over the years, you know, you hear about these big blockbusters and the greatest comedy of the world, and then you go see it, and you're like, well, that wasn't that great, you know,
right.
And see, that's what a lot of people that I've talked to about the movie kind of felt. There were so, I mean, I was really excited about it. If you go back and listen to my earlier shows, you'll hear me rambling about the movie and how I can't pronounce Jake, now I know, Gyllenhaal's name, and I was like, horrible, and, but he's, you know, he's adorable, so I can do that. But anyway, I was really excited, but I had not read the story, and see, one of my things is I read a lot of books, and then I hear about the movie version coming out, and then I go see the movie, and then I'm kind of disappointed because they took a lot of very important parts out of it, and then they kept some of the stupid stuff, like the movie with Harrison Ford, where he plays the CIA agent, Jack Ryan, and the one book, I can't remember the name of the book, but they just totally butchered the book and the film, and I was just kind of disappointed because there's one crucial plot in the book that they didn't even have in the movie. So I know that they have to edit and stuff like that, but it was just like a huge, huge part.
Well, I think the difference here is that with a novel, it's always difficult to condense it down into a 2.5-hour movie.
Right.
But this is a short story, and, you know, I think it's maybe 10, 15 pages, I don't know. I mean, I've only read it in digital form, so it's not very long. I mean, anybody could sit down and read it in an hour and a half, no problem.
So now you have to expand.
What's that?
So in this case, they had to expand on it.
Right. Well, no, actually, they didn't, actually.
Oh, okay.
I really didn't feel like they did expand on it. There was a lot of, you know, time that was used up for the cinematography, showing those sweeping, you know, beautiful views of the Montana, or the Wyoming, sorry. Right? Is it Wyoming?
Yeah, but it was really Canada.
Well, wherever it was. You know, they had the beautiful landscapes and everything like that. So they use a lot of time doing that, which is very important to the story.
Right.
But I think that they were very, very true to the story, and they didn't leave out a single detail. And, you know, Larry McMurtry, the man who wrote the screenplay, he's a very, very talented writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure everyone's familiar with, you know, the Lonesome Dove series and also Terms of Endearment. You know, so he was very, very careful to make sure that he was true to the story, because he's a novelist before he's a screenwriter. And many of the lines came directly, the dialogue came directly from the short story. So I was very pleased with that aspect of it.
Well, good. All right. And this is one of the questions I always like to ask about the movie, because when you saw it, how soon after it came out were you able to see it?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Okay, when the movie came out, how soon after it, you know, it had its debut, like in the bigger cities, how soon did it get to your area, and then how soon did you see it?
Oh, it got to my area, I think, you know, when it had its wide release in the entire country, because I think it was released in Los Angeles and New York in some larger cities, but then when it had the wide release, it was here in Dallas, and I actually didn't see it for a while because I just didn't want to be, you know, in the theater with everybody seeing it, you know, because I'm a movie snob and I cannot stand when people make noise or whatever, so, you know, I just didn't want to be around very many people when I saw it.
Okay, so it was quieter and a lot less people.
Yeah.
Because see, what happened with me, it was totally the opposite. It was like the first weekend that it came out, and the theater was packed. And the thing is, you'd think that would be more of a lot of gay couples, but obviously it had a broad appeal, and there was a lot of older couples. There was a lot of, you know, young couples that are going, like, on a date movie. And, you know, there was a few gay couples, but it was primary, you know, mostly straight people. So I guess that, you know, I expected that to a degree, but I didn't expect it as much as I did. And so it was really amazing. And then, of course, when it got to the, you know, certain scenes, like where they're kissing or something, there was actually a woman behind me, and it's just, oh, my God, you know. And And then, but, you know, the majority of the people were very accepting. I mean, you know, they didn't hear any gasps or moans or groans when they had certain scenes of the movie. So obviously you probably didn't have that either then, since it was probably a smaller crowd. So
did you have any? Also, the theater that I go to, I mean, Dallas has got a very active gay community. And there's just the area that I live in and the theater that I go to, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, mostly gay people. But
okay.
The people that go to the theater that I go to, it's more of a liberal mindset, and so I knew that there wasn't going to be much, if any, of that at all in the theater that I go to.
Okay, good.
But, you know, if that had I guess maybe that was something that I was looking to avoid also, because if that had happened to me, I would have, you know, had no problem pulling that person aside after the movie ended and ask them, why did they come to see this movie in the first place if they were going to be offended by, you know, gay sex?
Exactly. I mean, it's not like they didn't talk about it at all. And
I mean, everybody knew what this movie was about. So don't tell me that you came into this movie thinking it was going to be just some, like, cowboy story, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I had a good friend of mine that he travels quite a bit, and what happened was he wanted to go see this movie with some friends, and they went to when it already finished its stay, and it was at, like, maybe the cheaper cheaper theater. And so what he went with a bunch of people, and they all went, and it wasn't as busy as, let's say, it was when I went, but he said that people actually walked out, and we're talking about, like, you know, 2 weeks ago. So this movie's been out, it's been nominated for Oscars, it won Academy Awards. I mean, it's not like it just started, you know, just yesterday. But, I mean, I just was floored that these people were actually walking out, you know, like you said. So it's just amazing. But then I guess that's Northern Indiana for you. So,
yeah.
So I apologize for a red state. I'm sorry. Anyway.
I'm in a red state, too.
Oh, that's right. You got big Texas there. So what am I talking about? Okay, so getting back to the movie, instead of us rambling about things we don't need to ramble about. So basically, you were excited about seeing the movie because you read the book. And then I was just curious, what did you think about, like, Heath Ledger and, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal's characters then, as far as the way they portrayed them?
In terms of the way they portrayed them, I thought Heath Ledger just absolutely stole the show completely. He was amazing. It was a real testament to his ability, which I don't think many people have ever seen before, because he's been in just really cheesy, you know, Hollywood-style movies where he's just playing, you know, the pretty face.
Right.
But he really mastered the accent, the gesticulations, just the whole, his body language, everything. I mean, he became Ennis Del Mar. Jake Gyllenhaal, I just felt like his performance was just kind of there. But then again, I don't think the story is very much about Jack, and that it is more about Ennis. So right. I think it was fine.
Okay. And so, you know, obviously you read the book, so did you feel that obviously you felt Heath's character was really really true to the book then?
Oh, obviously. Yeah, absolutely. I thought he did a spectacular job, for sure.
Okay, and I was just wondering, of all the scenes that he had that were very, you know, impacting and emotional, I was just wondering which one, other than the ending, which one probably touched you more?
Which scene touched me the most? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Probably the one where he's, you know, definitely this one, and it was one of my favorite scenes in the short story also, is when he's in the kitchen with his ex-wife, and she's relating the story about how she went into his tackle box and she saw that that one of the lures had never even touched water, that the price tag was still on it, and that he had never used it. And how, you know, she was challenging him on that, and he said, "You don't know anything about anything." You know, like, he's just like, "You don't understand what goes on when we go out on our fishing trips." And that, to me, was just like, that was just like an amazing moment, because, you know, his character, in my mind, he's not gay. He's a victim of his own love and his own, just, you know, this thing that's greater than him, greater than mankind. It's this force of nature. If you look at the tagline on the poster for the movie, "Love is a force of nature," he's just like a victim of just loving another man. So it was just like a powerful, powerful moment for me.
Wow. Well, the scene that I really liked the most was when, I mean, it just showed you the anguish and the heartache that he was going through, was when they had their first, you know, time, and, you know, and they were having to leave, you know, and
right.
And you could just tell that, you know, Jake was like, no, I don't want you to go, and then he's like, well, I'll just see you later, you know, right? And then he just leaves, and then he does that walk, and then he turns in between those buildings, and then he gets emotional. I mean, I thought that was just, you know, very emotional,
yeah.
Very amazing, and
absolutely.
And, you know, and then of course later, you know, at the end when, you know, and he finds out what happens, and you know, it's just really heartbreaking. And then also I want to kind of hit on the, of course, the females in the movie, Michelle Williams, and I, of course, I can't remember the
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway, and I was just wondering what you thought of their characters.
I think their characters, I mean, the movie is just as much about them as it is about the two men in their lives.
Oh, sure.
I thought the portrayals were, again, they were spot on. I thought Michelle Williams was really just brilliant, and I thought Anne Hathaway was excellent also, and I think that she didn't get enough attention for her performance, to be quite honest, because being from Dallas and, you know, her character's from Texas, and in fact, I think there's no mention that they're in Dallas, but I think they're from the Dallas area. She was very, very, very good at portraying a Dallasite.
Oh, good. Well, you obviously would have input on that one. And, well, see, the thing I found amazing about the movie, and I just read, like, in the latest Advocate magazine, where they, or the, not the latest, but, you know, a couple weeks ago about the movie, and talking about the hype and the Academy Awards and stuff, and there was a couple things that I read that really, you know, surprised me. It was like when one of the questions they asked the writers of the film is like, well, how did, you know, the Jake character really die? And, you know, was it the blown tire, or was it the, you know, was he basically murdered? And in the book, they really, you know, and I guess even the writer of the book, she didn't really explain in yep. detail. But I guess that's part of the mystery of the story, I guess, is that it's up to the person seeing it and what their interpretation of it. I was just wondering what your thoughts on that was.
I think that's just part of the artistry of writing and just telling a story, that there's always a subtext, and that not everything gets spelled out, and that even though certain things are spelled out, you know, there is even text behind that, subtext behind that. And so, you know, are we ever going to know? I don't know. Is it important? I don't think it is in terms of the story. For social commentary, yeah, it's important, because if it was a gay bashing, then you can take that and say, well, that's wrong. But the whole point is that Ennis lost his love, and that he never had closure. He never knew how he really lost his love. Did he lose it because of intolerance, or did he lose it just because of, you know, some freak accident? Either way, it's a tragedy. So that's my feelings on that.
Yeah. Well, see, obviously you had listened to the show, and you had left me two posts just the other day about it, and that's why I'm having you on the show today, because I really appreciate the fact that people, number one, listen to the show, and then number two, they take the time to write. And I think that really shows the true person, is that when they're willing to step up and say, hey, I agree with you, or no, I don't agree with you, and this is why. And and the posts that you made obviously were, well, number one is you made a comment about the pacing of the movie, because that was one of the things that I really didn't particularly care for, because I wish they would have just had maybe a little blurb on the bottom and said, hey, 9 months later, or, you know, or something, because it, I don't think a lot of people realize that there was such a big gap, you know, the 20 years or whatever the difference
there
was.
There were cues that let you know. I mean, you know, Ennis got married and he had a baby, so obviously some time had, you
passed.
Know, had passed.
Right.
Since their first meeting.
Right.
And then also, you know, they aged the characters as well, you know. They grew beards and they got kind of gray hair and all that stuff, and, you know, Jack got a little bit more paunchy and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I I think the time in between their meetings, it's not consequential. You know, it's inconsequential. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's about the time that they're together.
Right.
Because, you know, that's what it's about when they're together. It's not about when they're apart. So.
Right. Because, as you wrote, in fact, the time between their meetings make the narrative more epic and rich. And, you know,
exactly.
that's very true. And so, again, I like to be corrected and yelled at in a nice way, and you did. And, well, the other part I thought was very good was, because, see, one of the things that I tend to disagree with is that there's a lot of movies that are gay-related, and what they do then is often there's a tragedy or something happens to the gay character, and I know that, unfortunately, it does happen, but I just wish that they wouldn't constantly beat that horse to death. And one of the things that you wrote here was, now regarding the end of the movie and how people, gay people always die, that's reality. Jack died because of intolerance destroyed and prevented the relationship that they had and could have had, respectively. And you said, you know, you thought that with Heath Ledger's character taking the shirt at the end, especially if you read the story, is far more personal than just scattering ashes on the mountain. That was the shirt that Jack wore the first night that they were together on Brokeback. That was a shirt that was used to stop the bleeding noses after they got into the fight on Brokeback. The shirt had not been washed since that day. The dry blood was still on it. And at the end, you see him embracing the shirt, in fact, embracing his true love, even after death, which I thought was very, very appropriate. I mean, very, very good at what you wrote. And that really, you know, showed the emotion. And, you know, just the simple fact of one shirt being over the other, you know, it was kind of like, you know, all the times that they hugged and kissed and all that. So, I mean, it was very emotional. And, I agree with you on that. It's just that I guess I wish that they wouldn't have a gay character always die, you know.
Well, yes, I mean, have you seen the movie The Celluloid Closet?
Yes. It's like...
You have. Okay. So, I mean, that's something that comes up in that movie, is that there's somebody in that movie, I don't know, it's a woman, it might be Camille Paglia, I don't know who it was, but they bring up a lot that, you know, in gay film, the gay character always dies, and that it's this big tragedy. But, you know, that's what art is supposed to do. It's supposed to make you feel something, and it's supposed to push your boundaries, and it's supposed to, you know, make you emote. And the same can be said for stories of a non-homosexual manager, a non-homosexual manner, or straight, whatever, that there's always tragedy. I mean, tragedy is something that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years in art and in storytelling. Would Romeo and Juliet be any kind of a story if the two lovers had lived?
Well, I know, it's just that... Well, I know, it's just that when you're paying good money to go see a movie... I mean, I think you brought up the point about, like, Schindler's List and...
Which?
Well, maybe it was someone else, but I thought someone made a point about seeing, like, if they're Jewish and seeing Schindler's List, or seeing the World War II movies where they're, like, the one that Steven Spielberg did, it was another person, I'm sorry, and, like, Brokeback Mountain, you know that it's going to be a sad story, so... You know, there's a lot of people that don't go see the movie because of simply the fact that it's a sad story. And it's like Terms of Endearment. I mean, there's a long list of movies that a lot of people don't see because of the subject matter. And so, I mean, I know it's important to see it because it's a good quality movie, but the thing is that, you know, I mean, I know that there... I mean, I would just think it'd have like a comedy or a gay story that... would not constantly beat the death card. And I guess that's my point. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of movies, I mean, like, you know, Broken Hearts Club. What do? They have one of the lead actors had a heart attack, you know, and it's a sad, 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 you know, and it's like, it beats that stereotype of, you know, we all should be ashamed of who we are and that, oh, yeah, this is what's going to happen to gay people. And, you know, I don't know. Because I thought, well, if I'd have been straight and went to go see this movie, I mean, I'm sure there's probably somebody... going, oh, yeah, you know, the gay guy got it. You know, I mean, it's just...
I'm sure, but, you know, there's other movies, I mean, that could be just as much said for Schindler's List. You know, someone could be saying, oh, I'm glad all the Jews got killed. But, you know, death is just something that art has always been obsessed with because it is just final thing, you know, and, you know, it's, death also involves the people that are left behind and how they have to deal with it.
Exactly.
You know, losing a loved one. And so, you know, that makes people feel something, and it makes you, you know, cry, and it makes you think about why you value your relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. Now, I don't think Brokeback Mountain would have been much of any kind of a story if, you know, the two characters, if, you know, Jack or Ennis said, you know what, let's just go move to San Francisco and we can be gay. And then they drive off into the sunset, you know, in a Jeep rolling across the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, would the movie have had that any kind of impact if that's how it had ended? Would anybody have cared?
Yeah. Well, see, that's what, you know, the person on the other show had said, is, well, if this had been a straight story, you know, people would have went, oh, who cares? You know, and so, I mean, as far as the story itself, not about, like, the death at the end, but, well, I don't know. I guess that's one of my little pet peeves, because I'm a big fan
of... No, I know. I mean, we all want happy endings and everything, but I think even the most popular movies that are not gay movies are ones that involve tragedy.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look at all the movies that have won, you know, Best Picture. You know, they're ones where people just, like, die, you know? Because that evokes a lot of emotion, so...
Yeah. Well, I know, and I guess we have to agree to disagree on that one. But it's just really frustrating a little bit for me. And I kind of expected that to happen. But then the thing is, it's quite possibly, like you said, is that, you know, it was just a horrible car accident that took. But it was just Heath Ledger's character. I keep saying the character's name wrong, so I'm not saying it. But Ennis?
Ennis.
And so Ennis... You know, is in his mind, he's thinking that, you know, it had to be something horrible, that horrific is what happened. And so, I don't know, it's just amazing that, you know, that he, but like you said, no matter what it is, because like to let you know, a good friend of mine that I've just been talking to, unfortunately, he had a friend of his commit suicide. And so this has only happened like a month ago. And so he's dealing with this tragedy. And he's just beating himself up because what he could have, should have done. And he felt like he could have done more. And I said to him, I said, you know, when someone's at that type of emotional state, you know, unless you do radical things and stuff, I said, you know, there really, you know, isn't much that you can do. And, I mean, because they already took him to counseling, they already talked to, you know, psychiatrists, he's already took medications, but this poor guy had such a tragic life with his mother and how she treated him for being gay that he just couldn't take it anymore. And so this good friend of mine is like now dealing with the after effect and it's just heartbreaking to see him. And then it's heartbreaking to hear that this happened to somebody, you know, this day and age with the advances that we've had. And, you know, it just shows you how much more we need to go. And that's why I think it's important that us as gay podcasters continue to speak up, to talk, and I'm really glad that the younger generation, the, you know, 16 and 17 year olds are coming out earlier, you know, so as they come out more, then hopefully the concept or the thought of someone being gay is going to be, eh, so what? It'll be like, you have blonde hair, you're gay, who cares? And that's, you know, that's the way it should be, and I'm really hoping that eventually it'll get to that point. And we don't have any of this stupid tragedy stuff. So, I mean, I was just wondering, because you're a younger guy, you're 25, and I was just wondering, as far as you're growing up and you being gay, I mean, how old were you when you realized it?
Pardon that?
How old were you when you realized that you were gay?
I was probably 13 years old when I realized I was gay.
Okay, and then how old were you when you first came out to somebody?
I was 17 when I first came out.
Okay, and then when you came out to your folks, were they okay with it?
I was 20 years old. Yeah, they were fine with it, but I have two gay brothers.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, and they're older?
Yeah, they're older than I am. One of them passed away from HIV, though, when I was 13 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Wow. So how many kids did your parents have then?
Five.
And three of them were gay?
Correct.
Wow, you're the second person I've talked to since I've done this podcast where they had a family of, you know, four kids, or four or five kids, and then three of them, the majority of them, were gay.
Yep.
And that's amazing, because the one, and unfortunately it's the same friend that unfortunately, you know, lost the person, but he has three total of the four kids are gay, and the oldest one was straight. And he's like, yeah, and the straight one feels like the black sheep of the family. And I said, I'd love to have you on the show, because I think it'd be really interesting to be able to talk to someone who's straight, you know, and then had to deal with, you know, the right. majority of the gay members. So I think that'd be a very interesting show. So maybe...
Yeah, for sure.
So it'd be, maybe you could... Now, are the other ones, the ones that are straight, their sisters in, obviously?
What's that? Oh, yeah, it's my sister. My sister's straight, and I have another brother who's straight also.
Okay, so are they all accepting and cool about everything?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So you...
Not even an issue.
So basically, your growing up have been very positive as far as, you know, being gay, right?
Yes, very much so.
And at work and school and all that, you've been cool.
Yeah, I find that most of the problems that I had with my sexuality were problems that I had with myself.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I wasn't willing to let myself be who I was. And there were times when, you know, in my very first job out of college, I didn't really make any mention of my sexuality. And then when I left that job, everybody, you know, they wanted to know why I was leaving. And I told them that I was relocating to Dallas with my partner. And I let them all know. And it was not an issue for them. And to this day, I regret not letting them all know, because I really like all those people that I worked with, and I would have liked to have just had them know, you know, but yeah. That was my own issue that I had to overcome.
Right.
So.
Well, I think we all, no matter who you are and what age you are, even if you're straight, you know, I think there's always issues that you self-impose on yourself, and no matter what they are. But I know a lot of gay and lesbian people have, I think, stronger issues with that, because obviously you're dealing with that, you're dealing with growing up, you're dealing with your family, you're dealing with your friends, you're dealing with,
right.
you know, and you feel like if I come out, and let's say if I do it and then not positive, then it can really dynamically change the whole life. I mean, you go to thepointfoundation.org and you read these stories about these kids that come out and their parents disown them, and, you know, like one time
right.
the parent came home, was looking in the kid's bedroom and found a magazine that happened to be gay, and then the next thing you know, the kid comes home from school, and there's suitcases, and a note says, pack your stuff and get out.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, that just breaks my heart, knowing that that happens. But the thing is that, folks, it's reality. And that as much as we, I mean, I'm really happy for you, because obviously you had a great set of parents, you have family that cares about you, you have people that you can talk to, you have, you know, now a great partner that you've been able to share your life with, and you've got all these great things to share. And that's what I want people to understand, that yes, it can happen. You don't have to have all the negatives of being gay. But for me, when I was in high school, and that, you know, we're talking the 80s here, is that, you know, I got constantly harassed for being gay.
Right.
And I wasn't out to anybody. I was just a shy, quiet guy. Nobody would believe me if they heard I was a podcaster and does all these things. They would, the people that are in my class, they would probably shit their pants, because they would not believe that that's the same person. But,
right.
But I think in a way it kind of helped make me a stronger person, and, you know, and also with my exes,
sure.
you know, it helped me become better about myself, like it did for you, because obviously now you're feeling better about things, and you're more
yeah.
open, and you're more honest about it, and, you know, and that's what I just hope that people can get out of this show, as well as any gay podcaster, is that, you know, you just got to be happy with who you are, because why waste all that time and, you know, energy and have to deal with it in a negative way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm really happy for you. And you're the second person that I've talked to that's in this age group that has not had any problems. And I'm really happy to hear that, you know? And, you know, for every great story, unfortunately, we have to have a not-so-great
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, there's more unhappy stories than there are the happy stories. So,
yeah.
But, you know, that's reality, and we can't just turn a blind eye from it. And, you know, if those are our stories and that's how, you know, mainstream media picks it up, or not even mainstream media, just, you know, if queer artists discuss these stories, they're going to have to they're going to talk about the tragedy.
Right.
You know, I think it's inevitable. Art imitates life.
Yep, that's so true.
So.
Okay. Well, great. Well, Adam, I really do appreciate you taking the time today because
thank
obviously.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. I really just.
Well, no problem. I mean, I think you're very articulate, and I think you said some wonderful things not only about the movie but also about you as a person. And I think that, you know, I wish you and your partner all the success, and I hope you have a long, happy relationship. And I want people to check out your website. So if you could do me a favor, give us your website again.
Sure. It's the Krebs Cycle. blogspot.com.
Okay, and then also they can find your show on iTunes, and you know, so subscribe to the show, people, and so after you listen to mine, you know, listen to Adam's, you know, or vice versa, you know, I don't care, but as long as you listen and you write and you correspond and you, and that's the other key thing, folks. I want you to please go to my website, which is rambleredhead.blogspot.com. You can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com. I also have a comment line on the top of the website. You can check out and leave a comment. And I'd love to hear from you. And anything you can add or say, or if you have anybody that would be a great interviewee, please let me know. Because that's how I do this. This is how Adam became part of my show, because he interacted with me. So, again, I appreciate the feedback. And keep on listening to the Ramble Redhead Show. Thank you.